Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 232 for July 29th, 2019. Today, we will be discussing the 305th weekly report, and you should be seeing that on your screen right now while I'm talking. But if you'd like to download your own version or your own copy, just go to timingresearch.com and or timingresearch.com/reports, and you can get access to either the web or PDF version right there. And we are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern time, but you can also listen to the audio-only podcast version of all episodes. Just search for Timing Research on your favorite podcast directory and subscribe there. Today, I have arranged for Jake Bernstein, Jim Kenny, Eric Gephardt, and Anka Metcalf to join us, and Anka will be moderating, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to her.
Thank you so much, David, for having us, and welcome, everyone. Monday, July 29th, and we're just a couple of days away from ending a very strong month, I would say, a very committed month to making new highs, so that's very interesting in the market. It is 1 o'clock, and let's get this show rolling. I think that it would be best if we do a little bit of presentation and, let our audience learn a little bit about ourselves and what we do. And Eric, let's start with you.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for having me. Well, I've been in this business for quite a few years now. Every time I look back, it seems to get longer than I think. So it's been since 1991. And started off with futures and options, working at an options brokerage firm and sort of cutting my teeth in that regard, learning more about spreads, complex option spreads, multi-leg spreads, and that type of thing. And then over the years and decided maybe I could do it myself. So a partner and I, we formed AltaVest. We're a brokerage firm. So we trade futures and options, but primarily our focus is a non-directional option strategy using E-mini, S&P 500 options, or even on the mini NASDAQ or Russell 2000 when appropriate. So we've developed some proprietary technology that we use with our clients to generate trades each day and also manage that risk and reward day by day as well. So that is what we do every day.
Thank you so much, Eric. Sounds very interesting. Jake, you have the mic. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure, Anka. Good to meet you again.
Good to meet you too. Sorry I missed you at the Traders Expo. We were like, there were so many presentations in so many rooms, and it was like so overwhelming. So by the time I got to your room, you already left. So sorry I missed you. Next time for sure.
That's all right, Anka. It was a dog and pony show. There's going to be plenty of those.
Yeah, for sure.
So I made my first trade in the summer of 1967, and trading for 52 years. I'm a real trader. I really trade. My work is actual, not theoretical. I've written 45 books on trading. I've been on Wall Street Week, CNBC, CNN, FNN. I lecture extensively throughout the world. And as I said, my work is actual, not theoretical. So I really trade, and I trade practically every day. I'm not a day trader. I trade mechanically, by which I mean I have specific objective trading strategies. Do not consider any fundamentals whatsoever. I've trained probably 700 or 800 traders to train traders individually one-on-one. And just got back from the Chicago Money Show. Very sad show, by which I mean a lot of people, a lot of attendees, a lot of opinions, a lot of people selling stuff, unfortunately, very weak on actual knowledge. So that when you look at someone who came to the meeting to learn something, they usually leave more confused than when they got there. So that's about all I have to say about myself. Turn it over to back to you, Anka.
Thank you so much, Jake. And I have to partially agree with you on that. Maybe we have time to develop later on. But anyways, Jim, which is a pleasure to see you again and a pleasure to hear you again. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, optionprofessor.com has been around for a long time and educates people on the uses and risks of the options and how they can be used for limited risk speculation. calculation for cash flow and income purposes, and also for hedging, either through married puts or collars or covered call writing, or even replacement trades where you use the call or put to replace the position and go from an open-ended risk to a limited risk. So there's a lot to learn, and I've been doing seminars for decades on this, both live throughout the country and also here on the internet. So every week we do have a podcast where we try to update you on what's going on and our opinion. And basically that's what I've been doing.
Thank you so much, Jim. All right. So I'm going to share with you guys a little bit about myself. My name is Anka Metcalf, and I'm the CEO and founder of TradeOutLoud.com. I've been trading for about 20 years, but about 16 years ago, I have decided to take it professionally and trade my own trading accounts. And what a challenge that was, but I never regret my decision. And I'm never looking back. It's so great to be a trader. And I think everyone in here is on the same page. So I've been trading independently, the equities and the futures market for about 16 years. I started my career swing trading, and then I dabbled into day trading, and I day traded for a very, very long time, stocks. And then I wanted to simplify my life. So I navigated towards futures because I found that, hey, if you're trading stocks, then here's the thing. You still have to look at the market indices. You still have to look at the indices, at the Dow, the S&P, right? To correlate your trades, to find relative strength, to find relative weakness, et cetera, and therefore scan for your stock, depending on the market conditions. Well, I wanted to go on a simpler route and just trade the indices. And I never looked back since then. And it's been around 8 years since I'm full-time day trading and swing trading futures. And I'm also swing trading stocks. Can't step away too far from that. Prior to becoming a professional independent trader, I come from banking background, and I have 10 plus years experience there. I'm also the designer of an institutional proprietary trading system. The reason why I'm saying institutional proprietary trading system is because I did not invent the wheel. All right. So the trading system was still in place, but it was at a higher caliber, account size. So I had to adapt it and design it for the retail trader, for myself, for a smaller trading account, not necessarily multi-million dollar trading accounts. My system is very simple, and I trade based on support resistance. And there's so much more than meets the eye. So I'm paying attention to all the support resistance levels, which are pretty much eight support levels and resistance levels that I watch for. I watch for specific trigger times because throughout the trading session, I've noticed, and my research has concluded, that there are certain times which are prone to triggering for higher or lower. And sometimes in the market, so within the market tempo, there are some market conditions where you could actually lock in some profits. Other than that, I'm also very specific on the price purchase of an asset, right? So I'm looking at the price location, but I'm also looking at the price structure. There are four points on the chart, four prices along the chart that are more prone to algo buying and algo selling. And also chart synchronicity and divergency. So over the time and over, especially this year, we have had a very moody Russell. And Russell has been a lot of times divergent compared to the rest of the indices. We had Russell down, we had indices up. No longer than last week, we had a weaker Dow, and that we had a really strong NASDAQ, strong S&P, even strong Russell, but we had YM that was lagging. Now YM is actually leading, and YM is in the green today, leading with 80 points to the upside. S&P is like pretty flat, and then NASDAQ was like just about to creep up a little bit, and then we're having that relative weakness again in Russell. So that's a little bit about chart synchronicity and divergency. I founded Trade Out Loud in 2011, and it's exactly as the name implies. I literally trade out loud and share my trades with all my traders. And I run an educational company that is specialized in educating individuals how to day trade and swing trade the futures and the equities market. And we also run two services, but more about that later on. All right, so this is a little bit of an intro. Let's get into the real stuff here. and let's talk charts. And question number one, which direction do you guys think the S&P 500 index will move from this coming Monday, so from today, to the close on Friday, August 2nd, so brand new month. Eric, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts? But very briefly here, okay? Just let us know the direction. Higher, lower, or do you think the market is going to remain flat?
Higher. Is that brief enough?
Awesome. Thank you. I love it. Okay, Jake, where do you think the S&P is going to go?
You can't fight the trend. The trend is up, but the market is more vulnerable to decline now than it's been at any point in the last 6 months.
Awesome. Jim?
Yeah, the word's up.
Yep. Likewise, I think the market is still up. And now let's take a quick look at the charts. And can you please give me, you know, just a little bit of more details? Why do you think that the market is higher? And rate your confidence in your answer. Eric, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, sure thing. Am I allowed to share a screen?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's see if I can make that work. Okay. You should be seeing what I'm seeing.
Yes.
Okay, this is just something we do each day with our clients, and just a daily chart on the mini S&P, and very simply put, we're looking at all of our short, medium, and long-term exponential moving averages. Market's trading well above those, obviously. And we also look at the RSI and the MACD, a couple of different indicators. And, you know, as we can see, we're making new highs, it seems like, every other day. But also, as Jake sort of implied, or more than implied, you know, the higher we go, I guess, the more vulnerable we are to a correction. You can almost see that here in the RSI, a little bit of divergence. You see the S&P made a high, RSI sort of followed here, and then we're making new highs here, but the RSI is not following. So divergence among indicators is, I guess you used the word synchronicity. There's some similarities, I guess, between those words and how you apply them with indicators. But if they're not all lining up, then, you know, that can give you pause. So I think the market obviously is, I think the FedWatch tool or market, the tool is the CME, you know, produces the, what do they call it here? I have it written down here. The FedWatch tool, yes. They have the odds at 100%, of course, for a 25% cut, this 25 basis point cut. And so the market's expecting that. And, you know, just setting aside the fundamentals, it looks like the trend is higher and it'd be tough to want to try to step in front of that train.
So basically, speaking of percentage wise, how much confident are you that the market is going to go higher, like percentage wise?
I would go 70%.
Okay, awesome. All right. That's confident enough for me.
Yeah.
All right, Jake, what do you rate your confidence in your directional bias? You mentioned that higher, but seasonal wise, we may start seeing a little bit of a pullback, you mentioned.
How do I share my screen?
On the left-hand side, there are three little icons, a blue icon, a green icon with an arrow. Just click on the second green icon.
Okay. All righty. Here we go.
Select your screen. Right.
All righty. Here we go. And let's share that screen.
Mm-hmm.
One moment, please. Okay. Can you see my screen now?
Not yet.
Why the hell do I always get this wrong? Hold on one second.
Left-hand side.
I'll ask my kids. They know how to do this. Hold on, please.
We got it.
Got your screen? Got my screen?
Perfect. Yes.
Okay. So here we have my chart of S&P Mini. And what we see on the very top is the price. And as the price comes down to touch the green line, the bottom line, as you should see my pointer now, we find support. The red line is momentum 28, which just like Eric, I believe that was Eric who spoke before. Was it Eric?
That okay. Was me.
We're showing divergence, very significant divergence, making new highs in price without a new high in momentum 28, which is a negative indication. But for me, the most serious consideration is this. At the bottom of my screen, I've got small trader sentiment, the daily sentiment index. When it's up here in the red area on the top, the small trader is too bullish, which precedes a decline. So we've had one, two, now three readings of a small trader being bullish, about 85% of the small traders that we survey every day are bullish on stocks, which correlates to tops. Conversely, this very low reading in small trader sentiment was almost to the day of the bottom. So in terms of probability, the probability favors a decline. The question is how much? Not much of a decline, so I'm going to have to say it's a 50-50 proposition, leaning toward the bullish side because of the trend, but the bearish side because of sentiment. So expect a decline, but that decline will be a buying opportunity as opposed to a selling opportunity. There you have it from me.
Thank you so much, Jake. Jim, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts on it going up this week really are a couple of reasons. The VIX has had declining highs in the last couple of weeks, 1450, 1350, and 13, and now it's back to 1268. So, you know, that is not a bad VIX if you want to be bullish. The second thing, obviously, is the market just made another new high last week, and so the momentum remains kind of up. Obviously, you know, we got a big week here on news. You got the jobs report, and you got the Fed decision. And so obviously this volatility could change. But you know, at this point, there's no evidence of that. And that's why about 55% confidence level on that. Again, I think any of this area up here is dangerous between 2950 and 3100 as far as it petering out, because we are seeing things like Amazon rolling over off of the 2000 number and Facebook rolling over the 200 number, and Netflix is in trouble a little bit. So, you know, there is some deterioration in some of the big leaders that have been there. And, you know, my feeling is 2950 is a very big point. If we close under 2950, if the VIX jumps above 17, then I think a 5 or 10% correction could easily happen in the stock market. But you don't fight the tape. And that's why I'm saying 2950 breaks, VIX jumps above 17, you're no longer fighting the tape. And you would use the whatever high is made, is it 1327 or higher, whatever that high is, as your short-term peak. Last thing I was going to ask Jake, you know, July and August, sometimes the S&P can make high points, and then September and October can be a rough racket. I know he's a very big seasonal guy. Would you say that July and August sometimes does coincide with a high point, and September, October is when you get the rollover?
Absolutely right, and that's been the case since the 1800s. So you certainly don't want to fight the seasonal, but we're not into that period of time yet where we get seasonal weakness and the typical October low.
Patience is a virtue.
You bet, absolutely. More so than ever.
All right. And remember last year in August, we had a pretty trendy month. So we were just holding the highs and making new highs. So August was a really good month for stocks and for the indices. All right. I'm going to give you guys my take, my technical take on the mini S&P. And as you can see right here, I drew a retracement, a projection actually for on the weekly chart of the mini S&P, 2960 being the high and the low, the swing low into the 2730. And it has released and it has regained most of the all of the pullback level. And then again, we're basing right now within the high into the 2950. And that actually Jim was mentioning the 2950 area. If we break down, we do have room to for a 5 to 7 percent correction. But the way I'm seeing it right now, we're holding on to these highs, and this is actually a target zone for me here. I'm gonna shrink this chart a little bit so you can see that my next profit target for the mini S&P, and the reason why I'm so confident, and I actually have about an 80% confident level in the fact that the S&P is going to break out higher. And my belief is that, you know, and like Jake mentioned earlier, I could care less what the narrative is because I look at technical analysis. Obviously, because I'm a day trader, I have to focus a little bit try to alleviate trading around the news, because I hate being in trades and having those shakeouts happen to get stopped out. And then, you know, just to see the trade running into your direction. So it's kind of sidestepping a little bit that by not trading the news. So all in all, I have a confidence level that is really high for a continuation higher. I see the price accelerating from this point to 3,100, perhaps not by Friday, but definitely this is the next profit target level that I'm going to be looking for. And I'm not fighting the tape. I'm going to look for pullback buys. Even when I'm day trading, I don't look for scalps to the short side. I just trend to where the money is going, to the bigger, to where the big money is going. All right. So this is my answer for my level of confidence. Okay. Are there any other reasons that you guys are looking and you guys are seeing this monster trend continuing into the end of the week? If there is anything else that you would like to add here that you have not mentioned in your technical analysis, are there any other indicators that you guys are using to help you with reading the next target level or the next projection higher, Eric?
Well, I think that there probably are some, but just offhand, let me make a couple comments. I think that, a lot of the trading now is, algo driven. So, there's really, when it comes to sentiment, I think that's all good and well, and it's fair game to pay attention to that. But, I think as time has progressed here, especially in the last several years, the computerized trading and, the algorithms are really driving this market. So, as long as that momentum stays in place, well, there's going to need to be some sort of outside catalyst to really shake that up a bit and so to speak, change the mind of the algorithm. So, that's why I think it's important to just really, stay with the trend. I think we're kind of hearing that theme from everyone. And, just be prepared, of course, for anything, but it's difficult to catch the falling knife or to, try to put a lid on the shaken up soda bottle. So, and also one thing real quickly I wanted to mention, I believe it was Jim mentioned something about some of the NASDAQ components. Let's see here. I wanted to just show one thing real quick, if I may. Okay. Are we seeing that?
Yeah.
Guys, how do I get back to that page? I'm not seeing it.
It should be a chart with Northman Trader.
We got it.
Okay. So basically the top is a ratio of new highs to new lows on the NASDAQ. And then the NASDAQ chart is there on the bottom as a footnote. And I thought it was interesting how you can see that ratio up at the top of the screen highlighted there in the yellow boxes. And you can see as the NASDAQ's making new highs, this ratio is actually declining. And then we had a dramatic sell-off. Now you can see the NASDAQ down here making these dramatic rally, yet the high to low ratio was not. And then you had another subsequent sell-off. Now you've had a big rally this last month or so, and that ratio, the high to low ratio, is actually declining. So a little bit of divergence there to sort of forecast an impending correction, but until that breaks, I hate to try to step in front of it and say, hey, this is the high and, go short and, mortgage the house. So, I thought that was interesting. I like to refer to this website on occasion. So that's all I had there.
Thank you so much, Eric. This is very interesting. Yeah. So what you would say is that based on this graph that we have now, definitely we should respect the trend. But if we start pulling in, there may be a bit steeper correction, right?
That's the way I see it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Maintain your trend, maintain your position in the current direction of the trend, but be ready to play good defense too.
May I share a screen?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to try this again. Here we go. Okay, share my application window. Just bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. And here we go. Okay, can you see my screen now?
Yes.
All right, so do you see something that's got S&P and the rest of that stuff on it? What do you guys see?
We see seasonaltrader.com and
good.
Then, okay.
So let me ask a question. I've got the computer. I've got every futures market and every cash index in the S&P and the Dow back to 1920. So let me ask a question. For the S&P, because I'm a numbers guy, hold on a second, what did I do wrong here? Because I'm a numbers guy and I want to know the numbers for everything I'm doing, I'm going to ask a question. In the S&P, which I'm going to select down here, S&P, just one moment, please. For the month of August, is there any trade since the start of trading in S&P futures that has been correct 70% of the time for the month of August? So here's my trade, if there is one. I have got 14 pages of trades sorted by best to worst. Example, buying S&P September, end of day August 4th, exiting September the 12th with a 100% stop, which means an option, has been right 73% of the time. So that's how I find my trades, all based on history. Now, what I can do is I can go here to the history, look at every trade for every year, all the way back to the start of trading. I can look at the equity curve. I can look at the big losers, the big winners. So clearly, because this trade has had one huge loss, it's a trade that's for an option strategy or an option itself, as opposed to futures. If I wanted to do something different, go back here and say, I don't want to risk more than 5%, and go back and put that in as a selection and say, I'd want to be in the trade for less than 25 days, for example. So I'll put my 25 in here. It's just a demo of how I do things, my simpleton way. 25 days, stop. I want to risk less than 5%. Is there anything that meets my criteria historically? And so I'm going to do my search. So there's a completely objective answer to the question you asked. So here's my trade. Buying August 10th, getting out August 27th, risking 3%. These are all my metrics right over here. Here's my equity curve right over here. And I'll show you one more thing before I give up the mic. Here's my equity curve. It's not that beautiful, so I can make some other decisions based on objective criteria, but I can go back and take a look at the seasonal. So let me show you that. Just one moment, please. Show me the seasonal history of S&P during this month. Take a moment to post, then I'll explain it in detail. Computer's a little bit slow because it's looking at a lot of data, and unfortunately our server is located in Russia, so it takes a little bit longer. Should come right up any second now. There we go. So here's the trade. This is a typical month of August. Starts out weak, but the second week it begins to move higher. Tends to end the month higher than it did at the beginning of the month, and that's my trade. So I'm done for now.
Thank you so much, Jake. Very interesting. Jim, is there anything that you would like to add here?
Yeah, I would like to add that, you know, at this, when you're in a market like this that's making new highs, obviously stepping in front of it is not the way to go, or has not been the way to go. Let's put it that way. So at this point, since we're in a market that's so strong, obviously sitting on what you've owned, you know, has been the way to go. What you're looking for is some evidence. And evidence, in my view, would come from obviously the market itself stopping making new highs on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis, so that you have some point, high point, surrounded by lower highs that you could actually use as a defensible point if you wanted to take a shot at the market on the downside. The other thing is the VIX has not been a terrible thing to follow. It seems when it's between the 10 and 15 area, the market seems to be fairly positive. And when it's above 15, it starts going into a correction. And when it gets above 20 or 25, it goes into the abyss. So I would like to watch for some evidence. And that's where I come up with the VIX number. That's where I came up with the concept of, you know, waiting for the market to make a high, and the concept of waiting. And it, Jake is using the month of August, and it may be that kind of a wait before you get evidence. But once you get evidence, all these people that are long, all these people that have bought, you know, they may want to come out. And if there's a reason why it rolls over, you get the order imbalance. And when you get the order imbalance, that's when you get a pretty good size move. One last thing is I like to look at the 200-day moving average to get an idea of overbought. And I think based on some of the indices and some of the stocks, the 200-day average is substantially under current levels. And I'm a believer that, generally speaking, the market does come back to the mean at some point. So these are some of the things that I'm watching right now.
Absolutely, Jim. I totally agree. It's like the king of all moving averages is that magnet on the line that draws the price. So once the price escapes, it gets extended from the 200 SMA. It's coming back down to retest it. And what an example today, because, you know, the Dow was holding so firm up, and then we had that relative weakness, and this is intraday, but we had relative weakness in NASDAQ and also in Russell, and NASDAQ could not help itself but test the 30-minute and go breach it a little bit, and then it rotated off of that 200 SMA. It's just that calling point. One of the things that I like to look at in my broad technical analysis is analyzing all the trend, all the time frames. And I do this once a week with when I compile my stock watching list, and when I compile what I'm going to be watching for the week, basically, and also my analysis that is helping me throughout the week, so I don't have to go back and forth on time frames. So I set alerts for that. I find that it's very interesting because we're on the topic of the E-mini S&P, and E-mini S&P is by far a better market gauge than any other index, but But what I'm looking at here, and this is a quarterly chart, and this is something that not a lot of traders go far out to look at quarterly charts, but I do like to look at this because to me, this is the extreme bullishness in a chart and the confirmation of the breakout or the breakdown within this quarter is very important. So what we have noticed is that last quarter we have broke up, we broke actually above the high. You can see the mini S&P here into the 2947. So we broke above the high. And actually it, within this quarter, still very early on, still very early in the quarter, And by the way, this is the most active week in earnings. It is where the companies, where most of the companies report earnings, not most of the companies, but I would say a high percentage of companies report earnings this week. So we still have about 4 to 5 weeks left of really, really active earnings. And then things are going to pan down a little bit. But this young, very, very young quarter that has just started has issued a continuation higher in the mini S&P. And I think that this is very important for chart structure because even if we get a pullback, and this is something that Jim mentioned earlier, even if we get a pullback, it's not going to be a substantial pullback, but it's exactly going to be the type of pullback that you want to buy. So any pullback that is going to form on the daily, on the weekly is definitely going to be noteworthy of buying off of the key levels. I also like the fact that Jim mentioned the VIX, and I want to add something here. I'm going to take it to the weekly chart and print the VIX out. Here they are. And I think that it is very interesting that they are coming back into this $11 last week. Okay. Last week, you saw that we had a new low here and into the 1160s. And if you look, the line in the sand is somewhere into the $10 here. So $10.50 to $10, these are the areas that I'm interested in. And I think that if the market shoots up, and we're going to get a big shoot up and then the VIX are going to come right into the $10 area. This may be a good opportunity to start legging into some VIX for protection. And this is what I do to hedge my portfolio, get a little bit of protection and try to balance it out a little bit because now I don't have any short, but I only have long, long, long positions. So this would offset that a good balance. All right. So these are my thoughts on the VIX and on the mini S&P. Now, to continue, what are their methods or techniques do you guys use to overcome the emotional aspect of trading? Because, you know, trading is so emotional and basically, you know, when we're thinking about it, like 80% is psychological, right? And only 20% method. So what are the tools that you're using to scrap out that emotion from your trading, even though, you know, when you're thinking about emotions, it's the most precious commodity, right? So because we're dealing with the most precious commodity, right, which is money. So it's really hard to separate your emotions, but we need to make it. And you guys here agreed that, you know, we're all technical traders, and we could care less what the narrative is. So to simplify it for our audience, what are the elements that we need to focus on to alleviate those emotions and to try to step away from them? Are there any tools that are helping with your trading make better decisions and not emotional decisions? Eric, start with you.
Sure, I can start. Well, you know, over the years, that's the biggest pitfall I think we found is with individual clients and even ourselves was, you know, you zig when you should zag and vice versa. And you end up, you know, buying the highs and selling the lows and, you know, you lament and you say, I'll never do that again. And you end up doing it again. And, you know, so I think we've all been there and experienced those highs and lows and the fear and the greed, the anxiety and the hope and all that good stuff. So, you know, I won't go too long into this, but you're sort of, your question almost is, exactly why we did what we did with our technology that we created for trading options. And in particular, what we do is we sell option premium with covered spreads. So we built a platform that has an algorithm behind the scenes, and it generates option spreads that have a high probability of success. And then what it will do is, once your trade is filled, it will automatically manage that position for you. So you can set up your parameters to close out that position for you, whether or not it hits a particular profit or target threshold. And what I can do there is show you real quickly. Okay, you should be seeing ThetaTrader.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So essentially, you can choose what your outlook would be, bullish or bearish or neutral. You can choose your market symbol here based on the NASDAQ or the Russell or the E-mini. And we have the various strategies that are pre-populated depending on your market outlook. So, I don't know. In this case, let's say we are cautiously bullish is what it sounds like. So maybe you wanted to, let's say you want to sell some put spreads for August end of month. So ThetaTrader basically will pre-populate the strikes that you should be selecting, or really selects the strikes for you. So selling the 2885 puts, buying the 2865 puts, you can see the deltas here, and those represent the approximate probability of those options expiring in the money. So if you want to see what that looks like on a graph, here we are here around 3020 or so. So you're selling the red line here and you're buying the blue line. And then if you were to go ahead and place that trade at a price here, it pre-populates it for you. Let's say you sell a quantity of, let's just say 3, for example. You place that order, and then from that point forward, this is in demo amount mode, of course, but from that point forward, the program will automatically track it for you. And what happens is it'll basically exit that position based on a color code strategy. And I just loaded a trade, and we can get back to a simulator, but I just want to give just a brief overview of how we do it, and how we automate in part the trade selection, but also, I think more importantly, really it's your trade management. Once you have the trade on, that's when the real trading begins. So you need to really manage that trade. You don't want to let those winners turn into losers and all that good stuff. So we try to take that out of the hands of us humans and put it into the hands of the algo and let the machine decide for us.
I love that, Eric, because like sometimes, you're getting the price right into target, and then the algos are just hitting that target and bam, they're taking the price down. So I've noticed this, that management, if you're doing this on an intraday level, it's a little bit harder with the algos. So a good example for this was NASDAQ before Google reported earnings, Google, Amazon, et cetera, reported earnings, and Intel. And I had a profit target in, NASDAQ I believe it was like 80.50 or so. And then it went just straight to that. I think it printed at 53.5. And if you did not have an order in, you couldn't stand it. You would still be in that trade, and then it pulled back,
Right.
So that's my point, because the thing is that you really have to think like a machine and act like a machine. And sometimes it's hard because you think like, oh, but wait a minute, what if it's going to 50? What if it's going to go another 5 points higher? I want to juice it as much as I can. Sometimes you can't. And sometimes it's better to get a small slice of the pie, than to get a pie at all. All right. So, Jake, what are some technical elements, or if there are any technical analysis tools or indicators that you use to refine your trading and kind of step away from that emotional state?
Well, let me say this about that. Before I became a trader, even though I started trading in 1967, before I went to trading full-time, I worked in a clinical hospital with psychiatric patients. Most of them were psychotic, so it's very similar to the work I do now, but I get paid a lot better. The bottom line is this. We have computers. Any strategy that can be expressed in algorithms, in rules, can be back-tested. So the first thing you need to know is, does the strategy work, and what's been its history? So it's one thing to say, it looks like it wants to pull back, it looks like it wants to do this it looks like it wants to do that. I avoid all that crap. The bottom line for me is, has it worked in the past? If it's worked in the past, I have confidence. If I have confidence, I put it on automatic pilot. I let it do its thing. I take my loss before the trade happens. So if I'm looking at a potential $5,000 loss, it means this. I am happy taking that loss if I have to. I take the loss before the trade begins. I deduct that amount from my account automatically. I'm okay from that point forward. Let it go. In order to make money trading, you have to not care. You have to be clinically dispassionate. So when I had psychiatric patients, I didn't get involved in their personal problems. I had no sympathy. I had no empathy, but I did have understanding. It's the same way when you trade. So for me, once the trade is on, it's going to happen either of three ways. I make a profit, I take a loss, or I break even. Those are the only three alternatives for me. Beyond that, any amount of thinking or micromanaging is absolutely forbidden. It's automatic, and that's the way I do it. Traders call me up and they say, Jake, how do I get trading discipline? I say, well, where does discipline come from? Discipline comes from confidence. Confidence comes from having something that you know works. You won't know it works until you've tested it. And if it works, you have confidence. If you have confidence, you have discipline. If you have discipline, you make more money. So discipline comes from having something that works. And the bottom line is this. In today's trading world, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work. Most stuff doesn't work. Therefore, if it works, that'll be your first step to discipline. If you have discipline with something that doesn't work, you need a psychiatrist. That's what I do.
I love it, Jake. Clinically dispassionate. You right. have to be clinically dispassionate about trading. I love that. I love that. Thank you so much, Jake. Always so much wisdom in your words. Okay, Jim, would you like to add something? Where do you get your help from trading? Is it indicators? Is it what is it exactly that helps you make those good decisions and try to stay away from that emotional roller coaster?
Yeah, you don't know if it's a good decision until after the fact. So that's really the reality of that. But, I call it managing your bankroll, whether you have 50 or 100 grand or you're working with 5 million and up. You're managing an asset, an amount of money, a bankroll. And that's why they have asset allocation, where, you know, you put a certain amount in bonds, a certain amount in stock, and that's the way you're trying to moderate the risk. And then stop losses is a way to try to have some idea that the river could stop at a certain point, although they don't assure you the price you're going to get. Hedging, using the options that I speak about, like the calls and puts as a offset to the underlying risk you're taking. There's a cost to that as well. You have to deduct that out, but at least you go to bed at night knowing there's a limit to the exposure. And then again, you know, a percentage of, like Jake was saying, you have a percentage of your bankroll in something, you believe in it. You place it mentally. You just take that money out as if you've already lost it. And if it comes back and it comes back chirping, all the better. But you went into the trade knowing right off the bat that it's not going to do such damage to your bankroll that it really matters. And I think that's what he's talking about as being confident. When you do that type of activity and when you have that discipline, you know, this trading stuff is a lot easier to work with.
Thank you so much.
Can I say one more thing, Anka?
Yes, absolutely.
Most new traders have no idea what they're getting themselves into. They start an account, $50,000. They find a strategy. They're all over the place. They make a trade. They lose money, they say. No big deal. I didn't come into this game thinking it would be 100%, so I'm okay losing money once. I'm going to stick with the strategy and be disciplined and take the next trade. They take the next trade. They lose money again. Not atypical, very normal. They say, I'm not liking what I'm seeing here. Maybe I did something wrong, but I'm disciplined. I'm going to take the next trade. They take the third trade. They lose money. They say, wait a minute. This ain't fun anymore. How could I possibly lose three times in a row? That sucks. I'm going to go back and look at my strategy and see, what if I had done something a little bit differently? They change their strategy. They get back in the game. They lose a fourth time in a row. They say, well, wait a minute. Four losses in a row? Unacceptable. They have no idea that even the best trading strategies in the world will lose six times in a row. They're not prepared for the drawdown. So therefore, you need to know what the game is all about before you get into it. And most people, unfortunately, like the people you saw at the Money Show, have no idea what they're getting themselves into. That's what I've got to say about it.
That is so true. And I found that as well. A lot of traders are saying, just give me that, sell me that indicator that is going to tell me when to get in, when to get out, and how to trail and do all that fun stuff. And exactly like you said, Jake, you know, there's so much more in trading than anyone could ever imagine. So they have a really long road ahead of them. All right.
Unfortunately, we have that big disclaimer to hide behind. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. That gives us carte blanche to do anything if we want to, which is why people are suckers. They buy all kinds of stuff that doesn't work. I'm done with my little piece.
Right. Absolutely. I have to agree with that. And I find that now, you know, there are more, more, let's say, educators into selling, and they have developed their companies into marketing companies. So they're no longer trading companies, but they're marketing trading companies. So,
they're big BS companies. That's what they are.
Absolutely. I have to agree with that. And if they're on the market for a year or two, fine. And then you're going to see them selling something else. I don't know. An Amazon. Selling tea on Amazon. I have to agree with that. Anyways, I'm going to be very brief here with what I look at into trading to try to step away from that emotional roller coaster, right? Because I cannot deny the fact that when I'm involved in the trade, and if I have a heavier size, I become more emotional. So I think size makes you more emotional. The only thing that works for me is to actually trade with less size. So trading, let's say, half the size or something that makes you comfortable in holding the position.
But Anka, they say that size doesn't matter.
It matters to me.
Okay.
So and this is just me. Maybe some other traders are handling size a little bit, you know, differently than I do. But I find that I make better decisions when I have smaller size, and then I can scale into my trades and I have something to scale out of. So this works for me. And this is number one. Number two, I always trade with the higher time frames. And I started my career in trading, like I said, with swing trading and actually active investing. So my zip code is higher time frames. And I like to start with these higher time frames. I like to see like a really nice trend going. And like I said, you know, even if I'm a day trader, because I'm a day trader and I run a trading room on day trading and swing trading, etc. And I like day trading a lot, but I can't say that I love it. I love more swing trading and higher time frames. Why? Because you're sidestepping those algorithmic, the news. So basically, technical analysis and everything and charts override news. Anything that is going on in the market, trade wars, what have you, everything that is, you know, tweets, everything that is coming out, unemployment numbers, FOMC meetings, etc. So you're having a more balanced, let's say, position. You could care less of what's happening because you have larger support zones and heftier support zones. Where smaller time frames, if you're focusing your trading on the 1 minute and the 2 minute charts, those support levels mean nothing for price. And I find that a lot of traders often, you know, get into trades without determining, you know, the size or without determining, you know, what their risk per trade is. And they're putting their stops. They're saying, oh, I'm going to get in here. I'm going to risk $500 or I'm going to risk $1,000. And if, you know, I meet that criteria, if the trade is going to go against the $1,000, then I'm going to get out without knowing where to place the right stops, without knowing, you know, technical analysis. So I like to look, and when I do my analysis, I like to look at very few indicators. So Jim mentioned the 200 simple moving average. I have it on all my charts, and I think that that is a magnet. So when the price pulls in to that moving average, it's prone to reversal. I focus on that for day trading. I focus on it on the 1 hour and the 4 hour, even on the 30 minute. It's really potent around those zones. I'm also using the 50 simple moving average. Also Amazon. Notice Amazon, I don't have the chart right here in front of me, but Amazon was pulling back. Amazon was pulling back to the 50 SMA earlier today. And I've mentioned last week that I would like to see Amazon into that 50 SMA for a buy into that area. So there are very few, elements that I use on my charts, but I simplify, they really simplify my trading. trading. So those are beyond the natural price support resistance from candlesticks. A couple of moving averages are really going to make a difference in terms of, you know, having the patience to wait for the right trades. All right, we're getting into the last 5 minutes of the show. Eric, I'm going to start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing, preparing this week, and if you have any classes, webinars, or anything that you have for our listeners?
Sure, I can do that. I'll be very brief. Let me show you real quickly just on what you were talking about there, Anka. Here's a perfect example. This is just a trade simulator for a spread trade. We're collecting premium. We're selling call spreads above the market, selling put spreads below the market, called an iron condor strategy. And we talked about risk, and some of these people don't know where they're going to get out of a trade. Well, here's why. If we go ahead and play this trade out, you can see the green, that means good. It's our color code strategy. So if you have this all set up to automate your risk and reward. Now it turned blue here, and that's a profit. So that's where the strategy, if you had it automated, would take that position out for a profit, and you would have captured just over 70% of the premium available at that point. If you hadn't set this up to automate this, and you thought, oh, everything's going great, and you kept moving along here, it goes to yellow, which is caution, and then it turns red. And red would have triggered your risk controls, and you would have gotten out of that trade for a loss. So you take a winning trade, turn it into a losing trade if you don't automate these things at times. So that's part of the reason for the catalyst for doing what we do with this. And then in terms of what we can do for those viewing, we have a free trial to our strategy and our platform available right there, cf.altavest.com/TT free 30. So people can sign up and go ahead and jump into a demo and do all sorts of simulations and get trade alerts and all sorts of good stuff.
Thank you so much, Eric. Jake?
If people want to go to my website, jakebernstein.com, I have a series of 10 webinars coming up where I teach specific methodologies that I use, rule-based, 100% by the rules, from start to finish, setup, trigger, follow-through, risk, profit target, profit maximizing strategy. That's what I have coming up. Otherwise, people can just go to my website and see what I do, plain and simple.
Thank you so much, Jake. Jim, do you have anything special this week or in the upcoming week?
Yeah, well, I do invite everyone to go to the website, optionprofessor.com. We do have a weekly market update that covers the stock market, the interest rate market, the currency market, as well as gold and oil. So we do give you a big background of the opinion and views that we have on those markets. And also to shoot an email to optionprofessor@gmail.com. Any specific question you might have, any strategy you're confused about or would like my input on, just optionprofessor@gmail.com. And Anka, thank you very much for having us here today. You did a great job moderating.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's such a pleasure. A little bit about Trade Out Loud. If you go to our page, tradeoutloud.com, you're going to have a quick pop-up window. Make sure you get on our emailing list. We will have a series of webinars starting with next week. Also, you can visit us on our social media page. We have a pretty good presence on Twitter, and I do post a lot of trading ideas and a lot of my thoughts on Twitter. So it's twitter.com/tradeoutloud for some trading ideas, retrading ideas. And I think this is all, David. Thank you so much for having us. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you guys very soon.
Yeah, great discussion. So thanks, everyone. Just want to give a quick reminder to everyone watching. Be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows. Be sure to join us tomorrow for the 87th episode of Analyze Your Trade. That'll be at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can go to timingresearch.com/live to get access to that. Michael Filigera and Jim Kenny will be there for that one. And just want to thank my guests again for today. Jake Bernstein of trade-futures.com, Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com, Eric Gebhardt of altavest.com, and Anka Metcalf of tradeoutloud.com. Thanks, everyone.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anka.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.